Welcome to session 3 of the Depression and Anxiety Recovery Program. This is an exciting presentation that's talking about the research that's critical to understand and take advantage to optimize your brain chemistry and your synapses. And many people don't realize that medicines do not improve your ability to make neurotransmitters or to build up receptors. In other words, they're not improving those things that lifestyle and nutrition can. A lot of people also think, if I can just get more serotonin in my bloodstream, I'll be okay, or more dopamine. In fact, I used to work in an intensive care unit, still do, about 3 days a month, and we used to give people IV dopamine to raise their blood pressure and to protect their kidneys, and the nurses knew I was involved in depression and anxiety, and so they would say, Dr. Nedley, why, when we give this, are these people not getting happy? Because dopamine helps you with healthy motivation, it helps you to have reward happiness. And I said, because dopamine doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. The brain has to make the dopamine. And the same with serotonin. If you notice on the screen, there's quite a process here. This is the dopamine pathway here. But first you have to get an amino acid called L-tyrosine. Then it needs to go into L-DOPA. Then it has to go into dopamine. And then it has to go into norepinephrine. Then it has to be stored in these synapses. And then an electrical conduction has to go for these vesicles to release into the synapse. Then it has to bind on to a receptor that is specific for that chemical, and then another electrical transmission occurs. And so if the drugs aren't helping us to make it and not building up receptors, how is it helping to improve the synaptic activity? It actually is by plugging the reuptake channels. Along the side here, you see that after a synaptic activity occurs, the chemical is released, let's say it's norepinephrine, and it's vacuumed back up. Why is it vacuumed back up into the releasing neuron? It's vacuumed back up so it can be used again. The body is very efficient. It takes a lot of energy to produce one of those norepinephrine molecules or one of those serotonin molecules. And so this is why we call these drugs selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, SNRIs. These are drugs like Prestique, Effexor, Cymbalta, and with dopamine, it's called Wellbutrin. Or if it's serotonin, those are the more common ones, such as Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil, fluoxetine, escitalopram and citalopram. And there's a whole list of those that plug the serotonin reuptake channels. Now, when we start plugging channels, we can get more synaptic activity for a while, but when those channels are plugged, for months, because people are on these medicines for months, maybe even years, we then get less of the very substrate we were trying to treat. There was already a problem of not enough of this. That's why we had to use this, this vacuum cleaner plugger. And now we have even less. And this is when the people need to get higher doses of medicines, and they have to go in and get even more medications, and we call these psychiatric cripples because they're dependent on getting their medicines continually adjusted, while virtually nobody is concerned about the fact of how can this patient make more of this neurochemical in the brain, which would have solved all of this to begin with, or how can we build up receptors. But today you're going to learn how to do that, and that's why it's a very exciting presentation. It has to do with what we're putting into our body as to whether we're making these neurotransmitters. And we call these nutrition hits. It's possibly the most overlooked cause of diminished mental power. It's an overlooked cause of depression and anxiety, and it can have very profound effects. Once a nutrition change is adopted for the better, it'll take about 7 days for you to begin to notice a difference, and it will continue to improve thereafter. Now, even taking a medicine, even if you're taking one of these SSRIs, it doesn't improve right away. It takes at least a week, sometimes a month, before you'll begin noticing a difference. And the same can be true with nutrition. But gradual improvement continues, and the maximum effect is about 6 months after changing your diet for the better. This is why we call this program a 20-week program. We're only in it for 8 weeks, but as you stay with it, your brain actually continues to get better over the course of 20 weeks or maybe even longer. So nutritional issues that can cause a lack of mental power. Insufficient tryptophan in your diet. Tryptophan is the amino acid that we need to make serotonin. But even more critical than insufficient dietary tryptophan is insufficient brain tryptophan. Getting tryptophan into your body does not always go into the brain. And that is because tryptophan itself doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier without a right carrier and without help. We'll get into that. Also, insufficient dietary tyrosine can be an issue. Excess cholesterol can be an issue. Excess arachidonic acid, we'll get into this, but arachidonic acid is a big fuel of inflammation in the body. And depression and anxiety is often an inflammatory disease of the brain. So when we're pouring arachidonic acid onto the situation, we're going to make the depression and anxiety worse. Insufficient dietary folate, insufficient iron, low omega-3 fatty acid intake, insufficient magnesium, insufficient zinc, and other B vitamins that are very crucial for optimal mental power, as well as some bioflavonoids like resveratrol. So let's talk about the front and center one. Why are we going to talk about this first? In part, due to the fact that serotonin reuptake inhibitors are the number one form of antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs utilized. Why? Serotonin helps us with mood. It helps us to be calm under stress. It helps us prevent panic. It can help us be less irritable. It can help us to be more sociable. And so this is a very nice neurotransmitter that we want to have. And that's why SSRIs are the number one drug sold in this area. As mentioned, dietary tryptophan does not necessarily equal brain tryptophan. In order to get brain tryptophan, we want to have tryptophan with carbs. Why is that? Because it's an insulin-mediated mechanism that pulls the tryptophan from the brain circulation into the brain itself. And we can't get that insulin key to unlock the door unless there are carbs there for the insulin to help. Once tryptophan is in the door of the brain, however, it will be converted to serotonin if we have the right substrates in the daytime. At night, serotonin is converted to melatonin, and it's even converted into a very nice B vitamin called niacin, which also helps us with our brain health. The problem with it is it's the least abundant amino acid in the diet. There are 8 essential amino acids. Tryptophan is essential. We can't get it from anywhere else except our diet, but it is the problem child as far as all 8 amino acids. If you're short in one of them, this is the one you're going to tend to be short in. Once tryptophan gets into the brain, however, it still won't go into 5-HTP. 5-HTP is 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is what is needed to make serotonin. First it goes tryptophan, then 5-hydroxytryptophan, then 5-hydroxytryptamine, which is serotonin. And so 5-hydroxytryptophan is inhibited by stress. If we are not coping with stress well, we're not going to make enough serotonin. We call that a vicious feedback cycle, because we need serotonin to be able to manage stress well, but if we're not managing it well, we're not making it well. And so this is why things like cognitive behavioral therapy can help us with brain chemistry. As we cope with stress, we can make more serotonin from tryptophan. It's also inhibited by insulin resistance. What's another name for insulin resistance? Diabetes. Or you could have insulin resistance without diabetes. We call that prediabetes or metabolic syndrome. And this is why exercise is so crucial. You remember on session one, we wanted you to get exercising. That's because we wanted those insulin receptors to work well enough for you to be able to get these substrates in your brain and be able to start augmenting your brain chemistry just from the exercise itself. But also, if you're deficient in magnesium or B6, you won't make enough serotonin. Or if you're lacking in bright enough light, which we talked about in our last session. A lot of elderly are concerned about the increasing age part. You make less as you age. And decades ago, the only people that really had problems with depression in our country were the middle-aged and the elderly. In fact, when I was growing up, depression was so uncommon among young people that it wasn't even called depression. It was called the midlife crisis, because you had to be a certain age before you might actually suffer from it. And one of the reasons was because you actually make less serotonin when you age. But here's the good news. Even if you're in your 90s, if you have enough light, if you have enough of these substrates, if you're on the right diet, if you're exercising, you'll be able to make as much serotonin as a healthy 20-year-old. And so that's, of course, great news. So tryptophan supplementation has been shown to improve our mood. It decreases quarrelsome behaviors and increases agreeable behaviors. And this is relative to placebo. How much tryptophan did it take in this trial? Between 1,000 and 4,000 milligrams a day will do this trick. And of course, this sounds like a pretty good relationship builder right there. Notice all of those things. If you have all of those things occurring, your relationships are going to be built just by getting enough tryptophan into your brain. Premenstrual dysphoria will also improve with tryptophan supplementation. This is where your mood goes down after ovulation up to the third day of your period. It also improves seasonal affective disorder, not just light, but getting enough tryptophan into the brain. Of course, it improves depression. It also improves insomnia. And many people are unaware that it improves obstructive sleep apnea. What's the most common treatment for sleep apnea? It's that CPAP mask. A lot of people don't realize that even better than a CPAP mask for 80% of individuals that have it is weight loss. If we get down to our ideal weight, don't need the CPAP mask. Don't have any problems as far as obstruction at night. But you might still, about 20% still can have obstructive sleep apnea, but almost nobody, even clinicians that are sleep specialists, I've ran across them and they did not realize that tryptophan supplementation has been shown to improve obstructive sleep apnea. So even a thin person may not need the CPAP mask if they're getting enough tryptophan into the brain. It also helps nicotine withdrawal. Now, this is a very addictive substance, nicotine. It's actually increasing greatly among our young people with the vaping and the e-cigarettes. And it's even more addictive than heroin. Heroin's more dangerous, of course. But many people are unaware that addictions are helped by this community depression and anxiety recovery program. This is not an addiction recovery program, but we've actually compared it to community addiction recovery programs, and this program is more successful than community addiction recovery programs. Even stop smoking programs. There are stop smoking programs. This program will be more successful in getting people off nicotine than going to a stop nicotine program. Why is that the case? It's because we're actually helping the brain chemistry so that there's not a need to self-medicate with these addictive substances. So whatever your addiction is, you might think about stopping it during these 8 weeks, since you will get some good brain benefits to improve your chances of no longer being an addict. So just think, if there is something you would like to give up, this is a good time to consider it, because of the improved brain chemistry will give you a greater success. Autism also is helped with tryptophan supplementation, and autism is on the rise in our society today. Even cognitive function, if you don't have depression and anxiety, your cognition will be better. Social affiliation gets better as well, and of course sleep because of the melatonin connection to tryptophan. So let's take a look at the foods that are rich in tryptophan. You can see oats, not a bad source, tofu, flax seeds. This is something that we recommend in our program for a number of reasons. You'll start to see why here today. Black walnuts, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, chia seeds are one of the top, and pumpkin and squash seeds are at the top as far as tryptophan content. These are foods that are combined with carbs. Now, you might wonder, isn't turkey a good source of tryptophan? It is, but turkey is a carbohydrate deficient food. High in protein, high in fat, won't have the carbs, and we've actually traced turkey. There have been studies done on it. People think they're going to take an antidepressant food by eating their Thanksgiving turkey, and none of that tryptophan actually crosses the blood-brain barrier, and so it's going into muscles and other areas, but we want to have the tryptophan with the carbs. In addition to that, there are five different competing amino acids that block us as far as getting tryptophan into the brain. These are what we call large neutral amino acids. And this is something that a lot of people don't realize. They say, wait a minute, if I need more brain chemicals, I need more protein. And so they'll go out and get these protein supplements or eat a lot of meat or a lot of chicken, thinking, I'm going to get more protein from meat, and that's what I need in my brain. Well, here's the problem with that. You will get more of the large neutral amino acids, which will block your uptake of tyrosine and tryptophan into the brain, the more protein you actually consume. So the studies show you want a adequate protein diet, but a much lower protein diet, and that will improve your uptake of tyrosine and tryptophan. This is the problem with the ketosis diet that is essentially a meat-based diet, and it can help you with weight loss because after you're on it for 3 or 4 days, your ketosis prevents you from being hungry. And so if you're not hungry, you're not going to want to eat as much. And ketosis can have some benefits. We'll talk about that. But eventually, you're not going to get enough tryptophan and tyrosine into your brain, and you're going to start to have significant neurotransmitter issues. So notice, for instance, beef does have tryptophan, but much lower in percentage than all the competition. And so this is why it's better to be eating even brown rice, spinach, pumpkin seeds, quinoa has a higher percent, flax seeds even more, cauliflower, sweet potato is what in there in the top three. Actually, both red and green grapes are also up there, although they don't have as much of the tryptophan itself. But at the top of the list is chia seeds. And one of the reasons why we emphasize if someone really wants to get more serotonin stored in those vesicles, chia seeds is a great way to go. So as we've already mentioned, there's a connection between tryptophan, carbs, and mental health. And these critical dietary factors work together to improve mood and cognition. We also want to have water-soluble vitamins and minerals that help us to be able to produce that tryptophan in the brain. As mentioned, large neutral amino acids compete with tryptophan to cross the blood-brain barrier. Carbohydrates derived from whole foods tend to reduce the stress hormone cortisol, which also helps us, and carbohydrates induce muscles to uptake large neutral amino acids, thus improving tryptophan access to the brain. And of course, that's if we're also exercising. And carbohydrates increase brain tryptophan absorption and therefore increase serotonin. A low-carb, high-protein diet will reduce your tryptophan in the brain. What about tyrosine? Tyrosine particularly helps us when we are under stress. A number of studies have shown the benefit of tyrosine supplementation in response to stress. You'll have reduced headaches, stress, fatigue, muscle aches, and sleepiness compared to controls. If you're too tired in the daytime, it could be due to not enough tyrosine. Tyrosine makes norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is a cousin of adrenaline. It can make us alert. And for those that even have narcolepsy, where they're falling asleep when they're just sitting down, tyrosine can be quite helpful. Improvements are noted in mood and mental states, happiness, mental clarity, hostility, and tension, and cognitive tests, such as math tests, coding map compass, pattern recognition, IQ-related things, being in school. Those grades will get better often with tyrosine, particularly if you're a stressed out young person. Tyrosine increases your feelings of vigor and also improves your blood pressure. Now, let me just comment on this and put it in perspective. Often when we're wanting to improve feelings of vigor in a patient with depression or who's stressed out, we're prescribing an SNRI. And the SNRI is going to increase blood pressure. In fact, we have to watch people's blood pressure when they're on this, particularly those that have high blood pressure, because it can go very high with the SNRIs. But when we actually solve the primary defect, not having enough norepinephrine in those vesicles to begin with, by giving tyrosine, the blood pressure actually goes down. And so that's a win-win. Good blood pressure and more energy at the same time. And this is why it's so preferable to treat this by looking at the primary defect and finding out what that is, instead of actually trying to plug vacuum cleaners. So what foods are high in tyrosine? Mustard greens are not a bad source. Lamb's quarters are even a better source. Now, that's not the hind leg of a small sheep. That is actually a green that may grow in your garden. Tomatoes higher yet, lima beans higher yet, tofu, edamame, green soy is actually a great source of tyrosine. Eggs, 513 milligrams per 100 grams, but almonds have even more, oats more, sunflower seeds more, wheat germ. This is why you want to avoid the white bread. It's actually better not to eat bread than on your white bread, but whole wheat bread is actually healthy for the brain. And there's several reasons for it, but one of them is because it's so high in tyrosine. Peanuts even higher than wheat germ, and pumpkin seeds actually come out at the top here as well. Notice they were both high in tryptophan and tyrosine. Very inexpensive way to get both nutrients. There are competitors for tyrosine as well, not as many as there are for tryptophan. But notice here at the top, we can go through the top five: tofu, pumpkin seeds, soybeans, and now watermelon shows up, and mustard greens. Watermelon, if you are caffeine-free for 2 weeks, watermelon is going to be a stimulant like caffeine, except it won't cause that wired feeling. It'll just have you stay awake. So if you have to be up all night driving under emergency and you're caffeine-free, don't go to caffeine, go to watermelon or get some tyrosine, and you'll actually even feel better than that wired feeling that caffeine gives you. So the ironic conclusion: don't chow down on high protein sources to boost either tyrosine or tryptophan. A lower protein diet will lead to more amino acids in the brain, and emphasize carbohydrate-rich plant sources of nutrition. Another problem area for many people in getting enough neurotransmitters made in their brain is their cholesterol. This is why we measure, if someone comes to our residential program, we measure everyone's cholesterol, their LDL, those sorts of things. Not because they're there for their heart, but because they're there for their brain. Patients with major depression tend to have significantly higher cholesterol levels than healthy adults. Depressed patients with elevated cholesterol levels have a poorer prognosis for treatment response. That means treatment with medicine. And so the medicines don't work very well if you have a high cholesterol. Lowering cholesterol improves depression and mood, as well as lowers impulsivity. So let's put this in perspective. One of the side effects of the SNRIs and SSRIs, you might be aware, is suicide. It's actually in there in the black box warning. Why do these drugs that are supposed to help depression increase the risk of suicide? They do it because they worsen impulsivity. And the impulsivity worsens before the depression gets better. So the most likely time for someone to commit suicide is within a month of being on these drugs. This is why if I'm prescribing one of these drugs for individuals, I'm wanting to see them very frequently to make sure that they're not thinking along these lines, because their impulsivity is going to worsen before the depression improves. Now, after a month while they're on it, their mood can improve enough to maybe counteract the impulsivity, and so it stays even. It doesn't actually lower the risk of suicide. But notice when we lower the cholesterol through diet, we actually help both. We help the mood and we help the impulsivity. So what's that going to do? It's going to lower suicide rates. And we've studied this in our program. Those that are thinking about ending their life improve dramatically with nutrition and lifestyle measures as compared to those taking medication, where it actually doesn't help prevent them to end their life per se. In fact, one statin company even took advantage of this. Statins are drugs that you take to lower your cholesterol. And they took depressed patients, they put them on their statin drug, and they found out their depression got better and their impulsivity got better by lowering their cholesterol. Now, their energy level did not get better, because statins actually work by decreasing the mitochondria, the energy-producing cells in the body, and so their fatigue wasn't helped at all. But if you lower it through diet, your fatigue can actually be helped as well, and so that would be a superior way of doing it than going into the statins. So I think it's important for us to mention where cholesterol comes from, some of these high cholesterol foods. There's many people that think tuna is part of the plant kingdom and has no cholesterol. But studies show that fish, of course, have livers. They make cholesterol. You put a plant-based person on fish and their cholesterol levels invariably go up. Clams, crab, also high in cholesterol. Notice this, chicken breast without the skin. And there's a lot of people that think, hey, if I'm careful, if I scrape the fat and the skin off of my chicken, I will have cholesterol-free chicken. Well, it does lower it some. Notice it lowers it from 80 to 73, but pork is 76, and if you don't scrape the fat and the skin off your chicken, you actually have more cholesterol in chicken than in pork. A lot of people are unaware of that. And then when you get to seafood, oyster is loaded, shrimp is loaded, and then the organ meats are particularly loaded. If you see anyone feasting on beef brains, you have to wonder about their intentions because they are going to be far more likely to die from a heart attack very soon, and hopefully it's not self-inflicted. But notice there are foods that have no cholesterol. Fruits, grains, nuts, and vegetables, no cholesterol. A lot of people think skim milk has none. You've taken the fat out, but you haven't taken all the cholesterol out. 4 to 5 milligrams per cup, 2% milk, 18 milligrams, whole milk, 33 milligrams. The only animal product exception is egg whites. Egg whites, no cholesterol. But notice the egg yolk, 213 milligrams of cholesterol. So if you're gonna eat eggs, it'd be far better to throw the yolk away and just eat the egg whites. And of course, ice cream and butter are also going to have cholesterol, these dairy foods. Now, cholesterol would be bad enough because it does raise your cholesterol, but we now know that not all cholesterol is the same in what we're eating. Dr. Bruce Taylor discovered this, but when cholesterol is exposed to the air, it gets oxidized, and it is far more damaging to the arteries. In fact, our studies have shown that if you're eating oxidized cholesterol, you damage your arteries within 24 hours of consuming that meal. And so it happens very readily. Dr. Taylor also discovered the four worst foods as far as oxidized cholesterol. Custards. This is where you're putting milk, eggs, and sugar in an environment, you're going to heavily oxidize it. Most commonly consumed custard is ice cream, and that is very damaging to the blood vessels. This is one of the good reasons why meat doesn't have a lot of carbs in it. If it did, it would be very heavily oxidized cholesterol in the meat. But custards were putting the dairy with the sugar. Of course, if you put sugar with meat, you know, the honey baked ham, for instance, that's gonna be very, very oxidized. Pancake mix was actually number two by Dr. Taylor. This is where you are powdering up eggs and flour, putting some sugar with it, and heavily oxidizing it. Now, we are recommending that you get a cookbook called Brighten Up Breakfast. We actually have four different pancake recipes in this book, zero cholesterol in any of them, very tasty and good for the brain. And so, but typical pancake mix that has those egg yolks is going to be heavily oxidized. Parmesan cheese and lard were tied as being the third most damaging. Parmesan cheese has cholesterol in it, and then we're powdering it up. And as we powder it up, of course, we're heavily oxidizing it, and it's as bad as lard. Now, Dr. Taylor's experiments also helped us to realize another study showed, and actually it was a study in one of the unhealthiest states in the nation. I used to live next to this state, but it's Louisiana. The Cajun food, a lot of fast food there. And there are 18 years old young men that are dying from heart attacks in Louisiana, 20 year olds because of their diet. And the mothers also can have advanced coronary disease. One of the studies was done on their infants. These are mothers that are eating a lot of these high cholesterol foods, and they found out that cholesterol in their human breast milk was higher than it was in cow's milk. So when they found that out, they thought, uh-oh, it's probably going to be better for them to not consume human breast milk. And so they did a study, and they found out fatty streaks were beginning in some of these infants in their before the age of one, they were having all this damage in their arteries. And then they looked at it. Which ones had the damage? The ones consuming cow's milk or human breast milk? Well, you'd think human breast milk because it had more cholesterol. But they were surprised to find that even though the mothers were unhealthy, no fatty streaks if those infants were consuming human breast milk. Why is that the case? Because it's consumed directly from the nipple, it's not exposed to the air, and it's not oxidized. Where when it goes through the dairy process and all of the exposure to the air and all of that, we get that oxidized cholesterol. So if you are going to be drinking cow's milk, it may be best for you to go down to the barn and get it straight. But I must admit that may be dangerous as well because of the potential for head trauma. So you might want to factor that in. Dietary vitamin C also has a nice effect on the brain. Vitamin A, C, and E are the antioxidants. And vitamin C from fruit and vegetables is associated with less depressive symptoms in the general population. An adequate intake of vitamin C has been found to improve attention, work productivity, work engagement, and vitality. That's a pretty nice benefit. And half of vitamin C is destroyed from fruits and vegetables when we cook them. This is why we want to have some raw in our foods as well, particularly these raw fruits and vegetables that are high in vitamin C, will get more of that benefit. Speaking of antioxidants, whole plant foods are great sources of antioxidants, and they also provide other nutritional benefits. But the amount of antioxidants in plant foods exceeds that of their component parts. For instance, a cup of cooked kale, which is a great antioxidant green, has 50 milligrams of vitamin C and 13 units of vitamin E. That means the raw kale is going to have about 100 milligrams of vitamin C based on what I said earlier. But the antioxidant potential of that one cup of cooked kale is actually equal to 800 milligrams of vitamin C and 1,100 units of vitamin E. That means it's a whole lot better to eat your kale than to buy your vitamin C and vitamin E in those bottles. So antioxidants have been shown to reduce the breakdown of neurotransmitters. So we preserve our neurotransmitters. They can actually stay back in the neuron for reusage and not degrade. Thus, antioxidants have been shown to improve serotonin and dopamine concentrations. Isoflavone, which is an antioxidant that comes from soy, are especially good for the mental health of women in menopause. And antioxidant trials produced improved depression and anxiety scores and quality of life in very statistically significant ways when we follow it over the course of weeks of taking these antioxidants. The Human Nutrition Laboratory in Baltimore, Maryland, identified the top 10 antioxidant vegetables. Number 10 was eggplant, loaded with antioxidants. Number 9, corn. Corn is still a healthy food for the brain. Onions, number 8. Red bell pepper, number 7. 6, beets. Beets are loaded with antioxidants. They also have some anti-hypertensive properties. Even beet powder can lower blood pressure as much as a medicine. Broccoli, particularly those broccoli flowers, more so than the stems, loaded with antioxidants. Brussels sprouts even more than broccoli. And this is where we get into the greens, which are very loaded with antioxidants. Spinach is number 3. There's one green that's even better than spinach, and that's kale. And the top antioxidant vegetable?
Garlic.
Garlic, yes, you guessed it. And this is why the entree, starting out with 4 cloves of garlic, can be very healthy for our brains and our bodies. The Human Nutrition Laboratory also looked at the antioxidant fruits. Number 10 was grapefruit. Kiwi is number 9. Cherries, number 8. Red grapes, number 7. Oranges, number 6, fortunately. Plums are a humble fruit, but they're actually above oranges as far as their antioxidant potential. And the top 4 are all from the berry family. 4 is raspberries, 3 strawberries, 2 blackberries, and 1 blueberries. What's the advantage of blackberries and blueberries? They have the anthocyanins, which makes them that dark color, which go into the brain and are very healthy for the brain itself. So you may want to consider eating these on a regular or at least a weekly basis. One of the nutrients that's been shown to be very healthy for the brain in many different ways is zinc. It's effective as an antidepressant alone, or it can augment the effects of antidepressants by using them with SSRIs and what we call tricyclic antidepressants. In fact, some drug manufacturers are putting zinc in their drugs so that their drugs actually are more than just marginally effective and can be more helpful. 2 weeks of zinc supplementation actually increases the receptors. Now, drugs are not going to do that, but the zinc does increase HT1 and HT2 receptors. That's the hydroxytryptamine receptors. Those are serotonin receptors that are increasing so you can get better serotonin activity. And zinc also improves attention deficit hyperactivity symptoms. So let's take a look at the foods high in zinc. Seeds are a pretty good source. You can see sunflower seeds, 1.4 as are pecans, nuts, sesame seed butter is going to be loaded with zinc, 1.5, cashews even more, pine nuts even more, and wild rice, a cup of wild rice, 2.2, and pumpkin seeds come out number 1. As far as the seeds in zinc. Magnesium is also an important nutrient that has been shown to increase brain serotonin levels by helping that tryptophan to convert over to serotonin. It has been shown to improve depression and anxiety in as little as 2 weeks. There was a trial of taking 500 milligrams of magnesium 4 times daily. Magnesium always comes with another substrate like magnesium oxide or citrate. And so that 500 milligrams was only 248 milligrams of elemental magnesium per day. And it helped with methylation and augmented other neurotransmitters, including GABA-aminobutyric acid. That's what we call an inhibitory neurotransmitter that makes us feel calm under stress. That's what the benzos are trying to do, is fill those GABA receptors. But magnesium has that calming effect by also augmenting GABA. What are the foods high in magnesium? You can see soy has a pretty good source, whole grain cereal a little more, peanuts, okra is up there and near the top. Brazil nuts, black beans, Swiss chard, and spinach are excellent sources. Omega-3 also is very important. Omega-3 is an essential fatty acid. Now, that's different than an essential oil. We talked about essential oils. Those are essential in quotes. They help us in a lot of ways. But this actually is essential in our diet. We have to have omega-3 and omega-6 in our diet. By the way, saturated fat is not an essential oil. These people that are talking about getting more saturated fat in your diet, that's not essential. We have plenty of saturated fat in the American diet, and we don't need any more. But we do need particularly more of omega-3, which is the hardest fatty acid to get enough of. Omega-3 helps us with brain development, function, and aging. Dietary deficiency is associated with higher risk of depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, dementia, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as well as autism. Those are all very common, increasing, and omega-3, even at an early age, can help prevent these many mental diseases. And of course, it must be acquired through diet. You can't make omega-3 from a non-omega-3 molecule. Omega-3 is most abundant in the brain, and this is would help us with optimizing our brain. Studies on omega-3 show it improves our sense of well-being, improves vigor and energy, it improves reaction time, it improves attention, it makes us quicker, it improves depressive symptoms, it enhances cognitive function, better executive function, that means the frontal lobe ability also goes up with omega-3, improves our abstract thinking, and improves resistance to depression, and improves some, but not all, aspects of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And it also improves the area of our brain involved in memory. It improves our memory volume. And what else? It increases brain-derived neurotrophic factor. You remember that brain fertilizer that we talked about earlier in our sessions. It improves memory in those with middle age-related cognitive decline. It lowers our risk of dementia and maybe even Parkinson's. And among the elderly, it's been shown to improve your ability to take care of your daily duties, and you will not shrink your brain over time like the typical elderly person will. So if you get enough omega-3, your brain can stay younger, and you can improve your learning and memory as well. And as we mentioned, it can protect us from neurodegenerative diseases that are listed there, but it also helps babies. It improves IQ in babies of mothers who breastfeed and get adequate amounts in their diet. And for anyone considering having a baby, I want to make sure they get enough omega-3, because it will definitely improve the IQ of the young one in pregnancy, and also as they breastfeed their baby while they're getting enough omega-3, we get that benefit. Toxins, however, can also be present in foods, and the number one toxin that produces a lot of problems in the brain is that of mercury. And sad to say, fish was a great source of omega-3 a number of years ago, a number of decades ago. It's still a great source of omega-3, but now as a result of pollution, it's also a great source of mercury. And the studies are showing the adverse effects of mercury are outweighing the benefits of omega-3. So we want to get our omega-3 from non-mercury sources. The connection between eating fish and mercury levels is so strong that researchers seeking to determine mercury exposure among groups of people often look at only one dietary factor, and that is fish consumption. And the larger the fish, the more the mercury in general. And also other toxins. Notice this is from a rural lake north of San Francisco called Clear Lake. The lake water has a little bit of an insecticide. EPA would say that's pretty safe, 0.02 parts per million. The phytoplankton have 5 parts per million, but the herbivorous fish, a little more dangerous, 40 to 300 parts per million. But the carnivorous fish, which is what we're actually fishing when we go to Clear Lake, California, 2,500 parts per million, and that can have some adverse effects on the brain. We call that biomagnification. Now, fish don't make omega-3 themselves either. They have to get it from their diet, and they get it from the plants of the waters, seaweed and plants of the waters, and algae can have more of that omega-3. But notice why mercury is an issue. It's been shown to cause insomnia, nervousness, hallucinations, memory loss, headaches, dizziness, anxiety, irritability, daytime drowsiness, emotional instability, and depression. If you look at that list, it's almost the opposite of what omega-3 is benefiting us from. And so why take a substrate in that's going to produce some benefits and those type of risks and try to balance it out? It's far better to get your omega-3 from non-mercury sources. The EPA now is recommending that we avoid fish. Pregnant women and children and nursing women particularly should avoid fish, or women who can get pregnant because of the mercury problems in pregnancy and also breastfeeding. And they say nearly all fish and shellfish contain traces of mercury, which pile up over time and can be problematic. Omega-3 in our diet in land plants is primarily alpha-linolenic acid. That's 18 carbons. When we add 2 carbons on, which we can in our body, it goes to eicosapentaenoic acid, 20 carbons. And then it goes into 22 carbons, docahexaenoic acid. These are the abbreviations of the 3 omega-3s that can help us in our brain. EPA helps us particularly with mood, and DHA helps us particularly with memory as well as cognition. ALA turns into EPA, which turns into DHA, but it doesn't happen on its own. We want to have B3, B6, magnesium, zinc, and vitamin C, and we want to have an arachidonic acid-free environment. Inflammation will make this worse. And so let's take a look at the omega-3 sources. Blueberries, the number one antioxidant fruit, actually has omega-3 in it. It's the highest, one of the highest fruits in omega-3. Spinach, that green, has omega-3 in it as well. One avocado has quite a bit of omega-3. Pecans and kale and red pepper also have quite a bit of omega-3. And then we get to the very high sources when we get to green soybeans or edamame. Mature soybeans are going to be high in your omega-6. The green soy, high in omega-3. Wheat germ oil is high in omega-3, another advantage of the wheat germ oil. Hemp seeds are one of the top seeds in omega-3. English walnuts are an excellent source of omega-3. But there are 2 sources better than hemp and English walnuts, and that's chia seeds and flaxseed. And you can see why we recommend that in our program and have so many recipes where you can take advantage of those foods. People on plant-based diets need to make sure their omega-6 levels are not too high, since omega-6 interferes with the conversion of ALA to EPA and DHA. So if we have too much of the omega-6, we also don't convert as much over. And they can still eat water plant sources or water plant DHA supplements as well. And if you're short in omega-3, we actually recommend you don't get your omega-3, DHA, and EPA from fish, but you get it from the plants of the waters where the fish get it from, because that biomagnification, far less problems with toxicity. Plant-based sources of omega-3 fatty acids do not have the toxins that the fish sources have. Now, in dealing with nutrition, we have to talk about obesity as well. And obesity is associated with depression, low energy levels, and after meal blood sugar over 140 is associated with fatigue. And the more obese, the higher our blood sugars get after we eat. Getting on a weight loss program and losing more than 5 pounds will start to improve energy levels and mood. A lot of people that are obese think, oh, it's so long before I get down to ideal weight. It's not even going to be worth starting. Not true. You start and you start losing 5 pounds and your energy level is going to go up. Your postprandial blood sugars will go down. It will be quite significant. Now, how can we lose weight? Well, the keto diet can be one way that we talked about. And the keto diet, we're going to talk about some of the advantages of it. The paleo diet is where we're getting rid of grains and things that have higher energy. And then, of course, there's the Atkins diet. All these are high-protein, low-carb diets. But the whole food plant-based diet has actually been shown to be best for the brain. Why do I say that? You might say, well, I'm just cherry-picking data. Not true. There's only one diet in a randomized controlled fashion that has been shown to improve depression and anxiety scores within 2 weeks. And it's a randomized controlled trial, and that is a plant-based diet. Significant reduction in depression and anxiety scores. And the advantage, of course, are the antioxidants, the no cholesterol, the no arachidonic acid, and also better tryptophan and tyrosine uptake. But I do believe in ketosis. Ketosis actually does help us, particularly when we combine it with a plant-based diet. How do we get ketosis on a plant-based diet with all those carbs? It's called intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting has been shown to reduce damaging oxidative stress in the brain. It produces production of new brain cells, and it enhances BDNF production. In fact, if you were to just eat breakfast and lunch and then fast for 17 hours, your BDNF levels go up greatly, and you get ready for more positive brain changes. Excess calories reduce synaptic plasticity, making cells more vulnerable to free radical formation, and moderate caloric restriction protects the brain by reducing oxidative damage. So ketogenesis enhances the body's defenses against oxidative and metabolic stress. It initiates the removal of repair of damaged molecules and carries over to the non-fasting period in regards to advantages. It improves glucose regulation, stress resistance, and suppresses inflammation, and it improves mental performance and physical performance. So we get the best of both worlds by being on a 2-meal-a-day program, if you can do that. Not everyone can do that because they might lose too much weight. But most Americans and most people throughout the world can actually eat enough on those 2 meals and then do a 17-hour fast, that's daily ketosis, and they will get the full advantages of a ketosis diet to the point where they're not even hungry in the evening once they're used to the no-supper plan, and they will experience very positive benefits to the brain. By the way, ketosis also helps us in other areas. For instance, if you have cancer and you're undergoing chemotherapy, when you fast for 72 hours, you'll have a lot of ketones, and that will protect your cells from the damage of chemotherapy. So your red cells and white cells don't go down, and platelets. As soon as you have the chemo, you can start eating again. So the 4-step weight loss plan, if you're overweight, no snacks. Why do we say no snacks? 1 out of 3 people are overweight, not because of what they're eating at mealtime, it's what they're eating in between meals. Bigger snacks, bigger slacks. And so we recommend only water between meals. Eat a good breakfast, moderate lunch, eliminate the evening meal if at all possible, and greatly reduce your refined sugar and free fats or fatty foods in the diet while emphasizing more high fiber foods. And daily moderate exercise, as you know, we're recommending 60 minutes a day. That's a 4-step weight loss plan that does not fail, and you will have great benefit. Well, we have some people that are underweight. Remember, some people with depression and anxiety, they have anorexia. They're wanting to know how to gain weight. How do you gain weight? Nature's most caloric-dense foods are nuts. And so if you're underweight and you need to gain weight, since nuts are so healthy, we recommend eating 2 to 3 meals per day with 1/2 to 1 cup of nuts with each meal. This will greatly increase your weight in a healthy way. The nuts that are best as far as lowering your cholesterol are almonds, pecans, walnuts, hickory nuts. Macadamia nuts will raise your HDL cholesterol because they're high in the monounsaturated fat. The meal we don't want you to skip, however, is breakfast. And the studies are very clear on this. Breakfast will help you with depression. And if you skip breakfast, you have a higher rate of depression, decreased happiness, loneliness, more sleep problems when you skip breakfast, and lower academic achievement and riskier behaviors. So the best meal of the day is actually a good, healthy breakfast. Lower levels of depression and stress, better cognitive performance, better scholastic scores, and improved creativity, which can help even people that aren't students in regards to their overall economics and finances. Our last vitamins we're going to talk about are folate and B12. These are very important for producing the final step of three different neurotransmitters. And the common mediator of the effects of B12 and folate deficiency is reduced S-adenosyl methionine. Correction of those deficiencies will alleviate depression symptoms, augment the response to antidepressant therapy, perhaps because of the resultant increase in SAMe. These are foods high in folate. You can see at the top of the list are lentils and black-eyed peas, but there's also great folate sources underneath those. And with B12 is not made by plants, nor is it made by animals. Where do we get B12 from? We get it from healthy bacteria. And if the bacteria in your colon are healthy, you may not even need B12 in your diet, because that B12 can backwash into your distal ileum, which is where we absorb it, and you can get enough. But one out of three people on a plant-based diet will get deficient in B12 because they're not able to absorb it well. And so we recommend, if you're on a plant-based diet, to be sure to take hydroxycobalamin. That is the best B12. It's a detoxifying B12, can help us against cyanide toxicity and other toxins as well. So back to B12. Most people with B12 deficiency are big meat and dairy eaters. They're just not absorbing it well. We think it's only a plant-based problem because why is there more B12 in an animal-based diet? Because there's more bacteria in an animal-based diet. But we recommend that you still eat plant-based, but make sure that your B12 levels are okay. And if not, it's a very cheap supplement to take as a B12 supplement. Well, as we look at all of this information, you can see why nutrition and mental health is connected. This is a quote from a prestigious psychiatric journal in Europe that reviewed what we have learned about nutrition in the brain and helping our neurotransmitters. Notice what they state at the end of this article. Now is the time for the recognition of the importance of nutrition and nutrient supplementation in psychiatry. They go on to say, nutritional medicine should now be considered as a what? Mainstream element of psychiatric practice. In fact, based on what you have learned, it should be more mainstream than the traditional approaches that are so commonly used every day. And if your psychiatrist or your mental health provider is not talking to you about nutrition, they are not up to date. You might want to encourage them to learn or come to our emotional intelligence summits, where we have continuing medical education that can help them to understand the crucial role of nutrition in helping people to overcome depression and anxiety and other mental disorders. And if we can have food that's healthy and tasty, which is what we've provided for you in your textbooks and in your workbooks, there's no reason to go back to the other way of eating, and you will have a win-win situation. Plant-based diets have also been shown to help people that don't have mental illness. This is a study on eudaimonia. What is eudaimonia? Eudaimonia is actually reaching your full potential and having the happiest life possible. We all want to achieve full life satisfaction, not only be free from depression and anxiety, and once you realize your full potential, that is wonderful. That also has been shown to be connected with diet. This was a study in New Zealand, but there's also one in Europe that showed the same thing. Eudaimonia peaks. In other words, you continue to get better and better as far as realizing your potential. Once you're eating 7.2 servings of fruit per day and 8.2 servings of vegetables a day. If you're eating 15 servings of those things, you're not going to have room for a lot else. And you will be able to reach your potential greatly. In several studies, individuals eating a plant-based diet experienced significant increase in physical function, general health, vitality, emotional well-being, as well as a decrease in depression, anxiety, and fatigue. So lifestyle interventions have an increasingly apparent role in physical and mental health, and among the most effective of these is the use of a what? A plant-based diet. So I want to encourage each one of you to eat more healthy plants and learn recipes that will actually help your palate as well, and you will not be disappointed. Thank you very much.